Hi, Thompson. We
How's
good
it
to go?
going? Yeah.
Excellent. All right, so let's start with your year of graduation, including if that was spring, summer, fall, and your major or majors.
The year of graduation would have been, well, that's interesting. So I finished at the end of 2011, so the winter semester, but I think the graduation was 2012, that spring. So
got it.
Would that make my...
if you finished all your coursework, because they do the one ceremony per year, but you were basically done at the end of 2011.
Yes.
And when we say done, I like truly done, not like one last course or one last internship.
Yeah, truly done.
Cool. And what was your major or majors?
It was, but still called ELPD, Electronic Production and Design.
Yep, very cool. And how about your principal instrument?
Piano.
Nice. All right, so we will get to your history later. But for now, tell us about your current job. Where do you work? What do you do?
So currently, I actually work at the bank, one of the big banks here in Canada, called Royal Bank, and I'm a banking advisor. So basically, that just means I do everything from like setting up investments for people and opening up accounts and various little sort of various maintenance of I guess the beginnings of banking, if you will.
Well, okay, so it sounds like you then are working with individuals as opposed to corporations.
Yeah.
Got it. So are you then sort of there in a branch office, I think, of when I go
into... Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, so, like, I think when I go into the bank, they're the tellers at the window, and then for more complicated stuff, they're the people who usually have desks. So
yeah.
You're one of the people at the desks?
One of the people at the desks, once in a while I help out at the tell as well, just because, we may have overflow or need hands there. But, yeah, I'd be at the desk or in an office somewhere.
Got it. And do you deal with loans, savings, or both?
Yeah, both. So loans, savings, mortgages, usually refinancing on mortgages. So we have mortgage specialists who generally deal with like first time mortgages or your first mortgage. And then if you need to refinance, then someone like me would sort of walk you through that process.
Got it. I know in the United States, because this stuff can work slightly differently in different countries, refinancing typically means if interest rates are lower than what the person got the mortgage for, they essentially get a new mortgage to pay off the old mortgage, but end up paying some amount of transaction fees. It's usually on the order of $1,500 or so.
Yeah, it can be like that. Usually if you're switching, but there's a lot of competition for that. So sometimes I know with us, depending on what the scenario is, you may be able to get some of those fees waived or covered for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so, not to delve into it too much, because I know that's not what the conversation is about, but sometimes a lot of people think that if you start your mortgage at one bank or one brokerage, when it's time to sort of refinance it or that term has come up, if it's sort of the first 5 years, say that the interest was locked in for that, a lot of people think you need to stay with the same bank or the same person that you had initially done it with, but it's always good to shop around, and sometimes you can shop around, get a better rate, and in fact, depending on where the rate is at, it may, even if you have fees, it may still make sense that you'd save money by switching to another institution.
Got it. So it sounds like you don't really work in the promotional aspect, or is it just except insofar as when somebody comes in interested, you sort of lay out the different products and how you can help them. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I would say that as I meet different people, there may be different solutions I can kind of offer them. So that might be a promotion type thing, but I don't necessarily go out from a general sort of business-seeking standpoint.
So I don't ask how much people are paid, but in terms of the structure of your pay, I'm guessing this is a regular salaried position?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And standard 40-hour week?
Yes. It works out. It actually works out to, you know, the amount of time you're in the office is more than that. So I think for us, it works out to you're paid for about 37 and a half hours, but that's because you're not technically paid for your lunches or your breaks, right? So if you add then sort of that 5 hours, you know, a week for your lunch, and then, you know, 2 15-minute breaks, so another half hour each day on top of that. So.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. That makes sense. And about how many customers do you deal with in a typical week?
In a typical week? That's a good question. I'm at a very busy branch. So, you know, I deal with customers in various scenarios. So whether I'm sort of helping people open things up, or if I'm just doing sort of simple everyday transactions for them. So I'd say anywhere from, I think, 15 to 20 people a day. So,
okay.
Yeah, so about 100 people at least that I'm interacting with, you know, on a weekly basis.
Got it. Got it. And just curious, are you technically anybody's supervisor? Or
no.
And sort of, what would be the next step up from what you're doing? Like, let's pretend you got promoted. What would be the next, you know, thing that's...
So, yeah, that's an interesting question. Primarily, so there's a couple sides to that. If my plan was to kind of stay in this realm, the next step, you know, the next step up, if it was sort of a progression, would be to, you know, become a financial advisor, and then, you know, from there I could look at maybe being a investment advisor or a financial planner. A lot of these jobs tend to be kind of similar, but just change in terms of volume or amount that you're dealing with or managing for clients. So so for instance, basically a high net worth person wouldn't be dealing with me in terms of their account. They would be dealing with somebody who would do the same. Oh, sorry. That
no,
me.
Yeah, that's me. My fault. Okay, no worries. Continue.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, it would just essentially be learning to manage more higher volume of income, right? And so, and kind of your options change as the income changes, right? So what
sure.
investments are available to you, and how you might want to, what strategically you'd want to do with those investments.
Right. So in other words, you deal with kind of anyone who walks up the street, except if they have a really high number, they go to somebody else.
Yeah. I would refer them to someone else. Yeah.
Got it. That makes sense. And let's see, the official banks, it's the Royal Bank of Canada.
Yeah.
And that's a nationwide bank, you said?
It's an international bank. Generally speaking, the Canadian banks are generally bigger than the American banks. And that's primarily because we don't have as many. whereas you guys may have different banks that go from region to region, you know, state by state, you know, we have, you know, all of our major banks service the entire country, right?
Right.
If that makes sense.
And then
and so they also operate in the states as well. So our bank also operates in the U.S. and has a big presence there. Although in the U.S. it's 100% virtual. So a bank like TD, so which would be common, like Boston, you see TD.
So
TD is actually a Canadian bank, which a lot of people don't know that. And then our other bank, there's another bank, Bank of Montreal here in Canada as well. In the States, I think they operate under Harris Bank. You see them more in the Midwest.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
So do you know about how big the Royal Bank of Canada is in terms of employees or
location? It is one of the biggest employers in Canada, 80,000 employees, I believe. I don't know if it's 80,000 in Canada or 80,000 worldwide, but it's the, I believe, 17th largest bank in the world. Don't quote me on that. I'd have to look it up. But
It's okay.
It's big.
It's
up there. It's big. I think our quarterly growth, our quarterly numbers, our first quarter just ended. So I want to say it's like $3.5 billion or something like that. But I see the information pass and should pay maybe a bit more attention.
It's all right. I'm just going for a general order of magnitude here. Your order of magnitude is really, really big.
Yes.
Excellent. And curious. So, can I ask personally, what languages do you speak?
So, I actually only speak fluently English. Through my time at Berkeley, I spent a semester in Greece, and then actually moved to Greece after Berkeley. And so, I would say I've got a mild proficiency in Greek enough to kind of get around the city, interact with people. Couldn't have a philosophical conversation, but could definitely not get lost.
Right, because I think of Canada as an extremely, and I should say I'm actually half Canadian, though I never lived in Canada. But I think it's a very diverse country with people from so many different backgrounds that it's, for anybody who speaks additional languages, I'm sure that's an asset.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you mind taking us through what a typical day of yours might look like?
Work-related or just in general?
Work-related from kind of when you go into work to when you leave.
So I usually, I try to get to the gym at least 3 times a week if I can. So my building, my branch is not a standalone branch. It's a part of a bigger commercial building. So there's a gym in there. So I might get in early try to get to the gym around 7:30, do a quick workout and get to the branch for about 8:30. And then that might start with me, just going through my schedule. I'm still going through an extensive sort of training program right now. So make sure I've caught up on sort of any courses or any licensing requirements that I need to make sure that I stayed on top of. And then I'll look at if I have appointments, I look if there's appointments that need to be covered, figure out what time. Sometimes we need some coverage on the floor, sort of as in a teller situation. So I'll look to see if I've been scheduled to do that or if we're shorthand. And then kind of just go about the day doing that business. Yeah.
All right. Very cool. And one criteria you had to hit to qualify for these interviews is that you enjoy what you do. So what is it about being a banking advisor that you enjoy?
So, for me, it's been kind of quite the journey actually to get here, because I had decided to stop, and it's not stop is kind of a little disingenuous, but I decided not to do music full time, at least in the way I was doing it a few years ago. And when I was kind of making that decision, I was trying to decide what to do. And one of the things, I was thinking, do I go back to school? Do I do an MBA or do I, go into law or something like that? And kind of the decision that came to me was that I didn't want to do any more schooling. I'd already done 2 degrees. And maybe if I found myself a job that would give me some of those business skills, I would, that would work as my education. So part of actually being at the bank for me was more just figuring out ways to support my music. So I know, for me here, some of the people who know me, there's an element that, people kind of thought when I started doing, because initially I started in real estate, now I moved over to the bank, that I was doing it to kind of, because I didn't want to do music anymore, I couldn't make enough money doing music, but it was really more just to kind of round myself out. And I felt that there was something missing in terms of my understanding of kind of finances and how that could help, me promote, the music the way I wanted to do it. So as far as, with what I was doing with music, I was teaching, you know, I was playing.
Yeah, I will say we will go deep into your history momentarily.
Yeah, yeah, but essentially that, you know, for me, the part of what's been going on with the bank is it's kind of met a need, which is one, just this idea that, you know, I wanted to kind of get more training. Two, but it's also supported me artistically and given me sort of the freedom to now look at the way I want to, you know, do my music and what decisions I want to make about it and allowed me to be a bit more strategic about that. The work itself, I've actually found very interesting, fascinating. What I've actually enjoyed is a lot of the learning that just, you know, with small things with finance and you know little things with like even credit and how that actually could have benefited me, you know, a few years ago, having some of this knowledge and some of the decisions I might have made, you know, if I wanted to say go on tour, if I needed to buy gear, and how I could have kind of used the bank to be kind of a partner in some of that stuff.
Gotcha. Very cool. All right. Well, let's take it back now to 2011.
Yeah.
Again, it sounds like you weren't planning to go work in the banking sector at the time. So, you know, put us in your headspace as things were wrapping up at Berkeley. And then we'll take it one step at a time from there to where you are now, both what you were doing and also where you were at. Oh, and I'll just add that if you feel that this story has a logical starting point earlier than 2011, we can go back further.
Okay. Yeah, no, you know what? That's a good place to start. So as kind of I was wrapping up Berkeley, you know, I made the great and silly decision. I say it was one of the best and worst decisions I've ever made. But we talked about doing a semester in Greece. And so when I was in Greece, I had met a girl that, you know, I fell in love with and liked. And we had stayed connected. And I know for me, sort of growing up in Toronto, I had wanted to live in other places as well, see the world. One place being New York, but also I wanted to live in Europe. And so when school was ending, I thought, hey, there's somebody there, you know, you've spent time there now. It may not be the most ideal location in Europe to go to, but there's an opportunity for you maybe to get go there and start something. So
the Greek economy was not very happy.
Yeah. No, not at all. So I actually decided to move to Greece, and I was there for the better part of the year. I was there from about January to almost September. And
of 2012?
Of 2012, yeah.
Yep.
And so, you know, had a good time, was, you know, playing music and doing things, but clearly, obviously, as you mentioned, it's not, it wasn't the most ideal place to kind of, you know, make a living at the time. So I made the decision, you know, you've had your fun, you've enjoyed it, but it's time to kind of get going with life and move home and see where we go from there. So I moved back to Toronto,
not directly relevant, but did things sort of end with the person you were dating, or did you convince her to come to Toronto with you?
So actually, funny enough, they had ended before I went to Greece. I went over anyway. And then they kind of rekindled, and I continued it while I came to Toronto, which really I should have ended it when I left, but that is what it is.
Okay.
And then, so I came to Toronto, and, you know, decided, all right, let's time to get going. And initially, actually, I started, I was fortunate, a friend of mine had a painting company. And so, you know, one of the things I learned in Greece was that here, I know, particularly in Toronto, I'd say, you know, we take work for granted. And when you're in a situation where, you know, people can't work or you want to work and you can't, you really don't, you really can't appreciate the luxury of what having a job is. And so, you know, when I came back to Toronto, I was in a different headspace, which was just like, let's, you know, you just got to get on your feet, start working.
Right. So, you're a Canadian citizen.
Yeah, Canadian citizen, yeah.
And so, did you move back with the family when you first came back?
Actually, I didn't. My parents moved to, are living in a suburb outside of Toronto. And because I wanted to be in the city and playing, and you know, whatever, and working, just figuring this out, I just kind of I'm really fortunate. I have really great friends and supporters, so I stayed in a friend of mine's basement for a couple of weeks. My youngest sister had just bought a condo and was going to do a project for about 6 or 8 weeks in Kenya, and then was going to Nigeria to spend some time with family. So I was able to stay in her condo for a little bit. And then one of my best friends was thought it'd be a great idea to get a house with four of us buddies. Still not sure how we got somebody to rent us a house with four guys, but we ended up getting a place. So in December, I moved into we moved into this house. But Toronto is the city I grew up in, so probably only took a few weeks before I'd gotten, even though I hadn't been in the city for about 4 years now, I'd gotten a lot of gigs that I was doing back. I started teaching, had a teaching practice, and started a program at a little music school that I was connected to, doing some of the work I'd done at Berkeley. Basically, set it up. Music program on iPads with kids. So I was pretty busy doing
yeah, and like teaching like piano, you're saying?
Yeah, teaching piano teaching, you know, simple composition, things like that, and music production.
And doing gigging, well. that's probably that kind of combination of gigging and teaching and some music stuff that feels like, you know, what the majority of Berkeley people do just after finishing Berkeley.
Yeah. Exactly.
So how long did that routine go on for?
So that was, I'm just trying to think of how long I've been back now. So that was probably about a good 4 years, four and a half years, maybe 5 years. And then I think for me, from an artistic standpoint, musically, I really kind of felt like I hadn't given myself an opportunity to try to be an artist, and there was, and kind of still is, you know, I look at, you know, some of the gigs I was doing, people ask, you know, I get asked, hey, are you playing? And it's sort of, I look at, you know, playing at a restaurant, doing a gig like that, and performing on stage is two different things. So as much as I was playing a lot, playing weekly, multiple times a week, sometimes, you know, I'd play like, you know, 20 dates or something in a month, I looked at that very differently than performing, and I wanted to be, you know, a performer, not just sort of some hotel pianist or something like that.
But like, you'd be like doing your own stuff too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and recording and things like that, which I hadn't started doing at the time. And then so you know, one day I was sitting at the piano in this lobby of I used to play at a hotel in Toronto called the Shangri-La, and I was just kind of sitting there. You know, not really vibing with the, you know, management, because I thought the management sucked. And, you know, I can't stand places that, you know, treat musicians like second-class citizens. So, you know, I just sat there and I was thinking to myself and kind of daydreaming. And, you know, the thought that kind of came to me was just, when I was younger or even now, when I fantasize about what it looks like for me to be an artist or be a musician, what I'm currently doing is not it. And, you know, I felt like what I currently was doing could be anything else, and probably paying me more, you know, and there wasn't a distinction between sort of playing in a lobby hotel and then doing some office desk job, which I know is different for many people, but I felt like if I removed the romanticism of what it meant to be, you know, a musician, and just because all of my income was coming from music, it didn't necessarily make me feel like I was achieving some sort of level of success as a result.
But I understand, as you say, it's, you were doing music, but you weren't being an artist, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. And so as a result, I said, okay, what can we do? Like, if you're not happy, you know, you gotta figure out what's next and figure out what both of those things look like. I know from a music standpoint, what it looked like was, well, you haven't recorded an album, you haven't recorded anything, you haven't done anything to start putting you on that path. So the first thing I did was, you know, I recorded a solo album, you know, and it was very sort of bootleg and, you know, budgeted and scrounged up as much money as I could and found someone who could sort of rent some small studio time to me.
Can I ask you, while you were doing your album, were you still like doing all these gigs? And
yeah, I'm still doing. Yeah, I was still doing all those gigs. I will say, and you know, we'll get to it anyways, that there is sort of the caveat or sort of hindsight is looking at back at that experience now, I do think that I also didn't appreciate how well things were going because, you know, I was making a decent income, had a lot of freedom and flexibility, which I really appreciate now. And so it's kind of ironic to kind of look back on that and be like, oh, well, you know what? You know, you were actually in a pretty good place. Went, you know, did the solo album and actually got one of my Berkeley friends to master it for me, which was neat and sort of a nice full circle thing. And then I started looking into what I could do. At the time, well, still am, I was sitting on a few not-for-profit boards. And both of the organizations, we had huge, we had a lot of real estate, a big real estate component to it. So real estate was a big part of what we did and how things functioned.
How did you end up sitting on boards of nonprofits that held real estate? That's a kind of not, you're the first person to ever say anything remotely like that.
So one of the boards was, so there's this organization called Dixon Hall, which also they have a music school, which is the music school I went to as a kid, and the music school helped provide subsidized lessons to kids in the neighborhood which I grew up with, which was a disadvantaged neighborhood with a low-income housing neighborhood, and now it's also a Berkeley community partner, and so I have stayed involved with them for a long time, but part of also what they did was not just the music school, but they had homeless shelters. We run an arm of like Meals on Wheels. We have different seniors programs. And because I was still involved, one of the chair at the time of the board had said, you know, you should consider being on this board because you would bring, you know, different insight as somebody who's been a part of the organization for as long as you have and been someone who's benefited from it. And so I said, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. So that's why I joined the board.
Very cool. Can I ask quickly, did being on the board pay some sort of stipend, or was this a volunteer activity?
No, this is a volunteer activity.
Cool.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, just go on, because you're starting to relate this to your next step.
Yeah, and as I kind of looked at that, and, you know, there were a few members who were working at different real estate companies in different capacities, and so I started chatting with them and
Other members of the board, you're saying.
Yeah, other members of the board. Uh-huh. And, you know, they started giving me advice, introducing me to different people. And so I went and got my real estate license and then started looking for work. And so I ended up landing at a boutique commercial real estate firm.
Got a quick question. So how did you get this real estate job? Was it through one of these people you knew, or did you just start applying?
No, it was definitely, I mean, I had applied, but I would say it was the network that helped me get the job. So in the brokerage kind of world, especially on the commercial side, really, you can apply for jobs, but you really need to have some sort of network that connects you to different people so that you can get in front of people. Just sending your resume in is not really going to get you there. So
sure.
Yeah. Specifically for a brokerage type of role, like if you're in sales, some of the other roles may be a little different, but for the role I was going into, you definitely, it wouldn't have happened without people vouching for me. So.
And were you attracted to real estate? I mean, were you just thinking, hey, this is a way to like learn a bit and make a bit better money? Or was there something about real estate in particular that attracted you? I know you're not doing it now. I'm just asking.
Yeah, it was both. And so it was one, you know, this might be a way to make a little bit of money. Two, like I said before, as I was thinking about, you know, my education and where I could get that education from, and not wanting to formally go into some, you know, master's or MBA type program, I thought real estate would be a great place to learn a lot of that stuff. As well, primarily, you know, I looked at commercial real estate because music was still, and still is clearly, was still something I wanted to be very present in my life. And I thought going into commercial would allow me to kind of work during the day and leave room for me to do things in the evening. And so that's kind of the thinking around that. And so that's why I ended up doing that. The real estate actually was, I really enjoyed it. What ended up happening was the boutique brokerage I started with got bought out by a bigger conglomerate, multinational company. And when that happened, I basically lost the support that I initially had. Kind of just got lost in the shuffle, and it ended up not working out for me.
Can I ask, when did you start with this real estate firm? Or are we talking
That was 2016.
Late 16?
Yeah, so like October 2016.
And so how long were you there for?
So I did that for 2 years. There's a couple things I had learned from the real estate, which is for me, you know, one of those things is like, if this is all I got out of it, it probably was worth it. But the going into real estate, I kind of thought that, you know, my music background was of no advantage. I thought that, you know, it's kind of coming in, you know, behind the eight ball in terms of not having the same background as some of the other people I was working with. But what ended up what I realized as I left was it was because of sort of the music network that I was able to get that opportunity to begin with. And then, you know, when you start in some of those roles, sometimes they're actually commission only, and eventually my job was commission only. But even when you're on salary, it's not a big salary. So the second thing that, you know, I realized was that because of my music and the income I generated from my music, it actually gave me the opportunity to give the real estate an actual goal, because it supplemented my income in a way that allowed me to just give it an actual, a chance.
Right. You could deal with a thin year or something in real estate if you're bringing in something else.
Exactly. And then the third thing was actually 100% of my deals actually came all from my music network. And so it changed my view as to in terms of when I was looking for what the next opportunity was, whereas I kind of came in being a little, you know, I'd say shy about presenting sort of the music as something that was a part of me, whereas because of everything that it had provided for me, it now became, you know, whatever opportunity you do, whether it's music or not, you are a musician first. And so not everyone's going to get that, and that's totally fine, but you don't want to be in a place that doesn't appreciate that or allow and give room for you to explore that side of you. And that was probably the biggest kind of lesson I learned from being in the real estate, because of how much value it brought to that situation for me, which seemed completely, you know, opposite or different from what it was.
Got it. Interesting. So, yeah, so you did that for a couple of years, as you say, bought out the sort of local atmosphere, changed, and you left for late 2018, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So what was your next step then?
So the next step was really actually to find a new brokerage or a new company to work in. And, you know, I started going to some of the other shops and, you know, I'd met a lot of people, obviously, after spending 2 years. And what ended up happening was I decided that I didn't want to actually enter another broker role if I didn't feel like I was going to be in a situation where I was going to have some sort of mentorship. And so I wasn't convinced that there was going to be a place for me to do that and get that sort of, I felt like it'd be another 2 years of sort of, you know, spinning my wheels. And maybe I might get lucky and something would happen, and maybe I might not.
Right. So it sounds like your income doing real estate wasn't huge.
It wasn't at that moment. Like, there's no doubt about it. The potential to make the income was there. And so that made it a little harder to just say, to just kind of leave out of, without exploring it, because there's definitely an opportunity to, you know, make a very good income. But I'd say, you know, the other thing as well that I learned was that because of what I decided the music meant, one of the things I learned was, you know, I do want to make, you know, a lot of money. I think we all kind of want to be comfortable. But I only need so much, and I also don't want to do anything at the detriment of doing the stuff that kind of feeds me. Leaves, you know, there are guys who work, you know, 24 hours a day, right? So, and, you know, I'm happy to work 24 hours a day if it includes my music, but not if it excludes it.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I get you want to balance. So what then, because we're getting it to 2019 at this point, and you started at the bank sometime in 2019. So did you just did you just sort of look around for brokerage things and then decide to change direction, or was there some intermediate job that you had for a little while?
No, well, so that's the other side of it. You know, again, back to the strength and the value that the music brought. It, because of the music, I actually was able to kind of take my time in deciding what was next. I didn't need to, like, jump into, a job right away. I had to tighten my belt a little bit, but but I did have the sort of flexibility to kind of say, hey, you know what, we've got work, we can pick up a few more gigs, and let's take this opportunity to find the opportunity that's next for you that might help propel things forward. So the bank came as a result. Actually, back to kind of some of the boards that I was sitting on, there were a few bankers who had actually suggested to me before I went into real estate to think about the bank. And I at the time, I said, no way. Yeah, I don't see myself being a banker. I'd rather not. But what I actually, when I came around to considering the bank, part of it had to do with the fact that it would be, you know, there'd be an environment that would be very structured. There'd be some really good training. And because I wouldn't say I shut the door on real estate. I thought it actually might be a good way for me to learn a few things that would allow me to kind of get back into that world, maybe in a different capacity. And so that's how I sort of said, okay, let's go. Let's take a look at this opportunity. Let's learn as much as we can. Let's get our, and let's see where this kind of takes us. The ironic thing, the only thing I didn't mention was when I got the job in real estate, about a month into it, I had recorded another album, and a friend of mine had just gotten the job as the president of Entertainment One, and we were chatting, and I played him the album, and, you know, he said, I really like it. You know, we're not doing anything like this on the label, but, you know, maybe you'd want to consider us, you know, releasing the next couple albums, and, you know, we can create something. So I'd actually gotten a record deal, you know, a month into working in real estate. So, yeah.
Very cool. So, all right, so how did you then, you said you knew people from the boards who worked in banking. Was it, again, that connection that got you the job at Royal Bank?
Yes, it was. You know, and so, it was, you know, I'd say the connection that helped open some of the doors, and then I went through the sort of their path of, you know, the various interviews that you need to go to, and essentially was offered a job working there. So
I think the moral to the story here is, if to the listeners, if someone ever offers you a chance to sit on a board, take it.
I would say to that, yes, definitely sit on it. But, you know, for me, there's a couple things, which is, one is, you know, you need to build a good community around you. And clearly, you know, sitting on a board helps with that. But the other side of it, too, was just, you know, seeing all the other things that the music has to offer, which is outside of the music. And sometimes we can be very narrow in the way we look at certain opportunities and think it's very pigeonholed or specific to one area. But it opens up a whole new spectrum of various things that would, give you opportunities in places you never thought that it would. So I'm very much, you know, a believer that you never know where your next opportunity is going to come from. So it's very important to kind of just be open to everything.
Great. Yeah. get into that. So, right, and you were hired, I assume, so you haven't been there very long. So you're basically hired into your current job.
Yes.
Awesome. Here you are. All
Here we
right.
are.
So let's move on to the third part of the interview of three. And my first question for you, and again, there's no right or wrong answer, and I think you have been alluding to it, is these days, like let's say the last 3 months, what has been your current relationship with music?
Last 3 months, I mean,
Like, are you still going out and gigging like you were?
so yeah, I think the funny and ironic thing is because, I mean, I don't know when this airs, I think you say in a month from now, but so I got the job in August of 2019, and I still make more money doing music than I do at in my current position, and sure that will change at some point, but my current relationship to music is I still play, I'd say minimum 10 times a month, sometimes more. You know, December I played probably about, I think I counted about 25 dates that month. Like, you know, I'm playing a lot. And one of the things that's actually also been refreshing for me is that the job, and it may just be the manager that I have, but it's actually been a lot more accommodating to my music than I thought it might be. And so I've been able to, you know, get out early if I need to go do an interview, or get out to a gig outside of town, or if I need to be at a concert, or if I need to do, you know, a radio interview or spot, something like that. I've been able to kind of fit a lot of those things together.
Gotcha. Very cool. All right. So,
Yeah, and I'm working on the next album, so that's my next plan.
awesome.
All right.
Awesome. All right. So, next question I have for you is, let's assume you'd have gotten a bachelor's degree somewhere.
Yeah.
Relative to if you'd gone to, I don't know, University of Toronto or something, thinking of yourself in the role, now I'm aware again that you're doing lots of music on the side, making good money doing it, but sort of putting aside the income aspect from the gigging,
Yes.
thinking exclusively as yourself in the role of banking advisor, is there anything you feel your Berkeley experience did particularly well to prepare you for that job you're doing now?
I would, yeah, I would, you know what I would say, the flexibility. So for me, the problem solving of what was at Berkeley, so particularly clearly in, you know, my degree with electronic music and sound design, right, with where you're currently always looking for different solutions. And I find that and it's not just me, people, musicians, who other musicians that are artistic people, where they don't stop at the first roadblock, and it's not really something I paid attention to, but people have mentioned it to me quite a bit, which is that you're always kind of looking for a different way to do it. And I think, you know, when you're starting something in the arts or starting music, you know, for me, there's a few big pieces about Berkeley that I would say still benefit me. One is that aspect and that creativity, but the other thing is Berkeley is such a great community that, you know, as you start to build those communities and get into a place where you understand how important that network could be. Like, you know, we definitely don't have time for it in this interview, but you know, if I went through all the stories about how my relationship with people at Berkeley really allowed me to kind of get through the program itself, that's another piece that for me was translated to, you know, all the things that I'm doing now. And it also allows you not to think, because you see so many different possibilities of what could be, it allows you not to, I know in my role, look at different scenarios, look at different people, and not try to, I guess, pigeonhole or be so quick to kind of make assessments or judgments about certain things. And I think it's allowed me to be, you know, a better advisor in that standpoint.
Sure. All right, great. Well, hey, let's turn that question around now, because Berkeley gives that one degree, the Bachelor of Music, and you went there knowing that. And indeed, it sounds like you're doing very well for yourself, both in, in your current career and in music. But all that said, when you look back at your Berkeley education, is there anything where you say, hey, this would have been really useful to have learned this while I was at Berkeley, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't? Anything missing or incomplete in your education?
Oh, where do I start? So I would say, you know, it's funny because there's a friend of mine who is starting a music program at a university here in Toronto called Ryerson, and he's modeling it after Berklee's music pro program. And I've chatted with him about, you know, he had asked me to kind of, you know, lend some insights and thoughts to things that could be a part of that the program. You know, and I, you know, what I said to him was that there are certain small, I'd say, kind of life skills and things that you need to do that are left out in, I find, arts education, which I think would really help make the difference between whether people do this full time or not. And you know, one of those things I think is like taxes. If you learned how to do your taxes properly. And learn what it meant to set up, you know, yourself either, you know, as a business or, you know, sole proprietor of different entities, and how that could, you know, that swing of a couple percent could be the difference between, you know, you making a living out of it or you not seeing the value in doing it and just understanding things like that. I think one of the other things, I know in Canada, you know, we have a big granting consortium here, so there's lots of places to kind of go look for money to kind of do your arts and stuff like that. One of my criticisms about, you know, schooling in there, because I had done a music performance diploma before I went to Berklee, which was, you know, if you look at a lot of the faculty and the albums that many of our professors were putting out, you would always see some sort of granting consortium being referenced on the album, and yet I found there was never one course on just how to simply write a grant, how to simply look for investors or sponsors or people that could help support you artistically. You know, we know some of the, you know, best artists out there have always had you know, patrons of one sort or another that have helped facilitate their art. You know, those are two things definitely that come to mind. But yeah, I think for sure, just understanding, like, to be, you know, one of the things I didn't mention, you know, when I'm sitting at the piano and saying, hey, what could I do, you know, other than what I'm doing right now musically or whatnot, one of the realizations kind of I came to, and, you know, people may disagree with this, but it was that, you know, the more I practiced and the harder I worked, the better a musician I became. It didn't necessarily translate into the more money I made, and which was one of the sort of draws to doing something different was, you know, could I be in a situation where what I did was linked directly to sort of the income, right? So for me, I'm still, you know, trying to figure that out. I don't know what, I definitely haven't found the answer to that yet. But that was one of the struggles I had, was how do I put myself in a position where I'm, you know, I'm a little more stable, not worrying about certain things, and it's giving me the freedom to, one, you know, live a life and not worry about going from gig to grab the money, but also allowing me to give myself some time to just dive into the music in a way that I'd like to put what I want to put out there.
Sure. Very cool. All right, so let's see. I think you're my 183rd interview. Definitely my first banking advisor. I've spoken with some other people who are working in the bank and finance sector, but it's a minority. So the idea is, right, no one's listening to 183 interviews. The people listening to this are the ones who saw banking advisor. Okay, that looks interesting. You know, Not a huge high pressure job like sales, but you're working in finance. As you say, you're learning stuff about finance that could be applicable either to other areas or if you decide to work your way up in the bank. So, you know, in terms of somebody who says, like, hey, this looks like a pretty interesting type of job, how do I get in on that? You have any advice for someone who's interested in bank advisor as a career?
If you're interested in banking advisor as a career, I think it's one of those things, like, not to sound like cliche, but like thinking about what's, you know, what job do you want to kind of do down the road? I mean, I got into it because ideally I'd actually like to work in sort of the commercial lending side of the business. And so this is kind of where I landed. But if you're interested in that, I think there's various ways. I mean, if you're here in Canada, the banks constantly looking for people to work there, and the organizations are usually so big that, you know, if you can get in the door, you can find your way to that job. But if you were looking at wanting to be a banking advisor, I'd think about a role, because this is really kind of just a sort of entry level or like beginning sort of where a banking career could take you. I think more about the role that you might want to end up in, and because ideally I think you'd want to, for me, the way I think about it is like, you know, what's the role that I'd want to do for like the next 10 years? This isn't really that role, but this might get me to that role.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. And let's broaden the question now, which is that, you know, you certainly have to leave Berkeley. You've done quite well for yourself, both musically and now in your, you know, non-music career. There are some people who haven't yet found that path, and let's say they're the current Berkeley students who are staring out into the big scary world and be like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? So for either or both of those groups, in general, what advice do you have?
I think my advice, and it's not really clear, but it's really to kind of move forward, right? You know, I think about this role and just how, I wish is not necessarily the right word, but how I might have benefited from doing something like this sooner, and how that might have played into how I looked at my music, right? I had a teacher who always used to say, you know, you can't be creative on an empty stomach, right? And so things are, I have a very like non-permanent look at a lot of the things I'm doing, and I feel like for me that allows me to kind of get into things, try them out, and see how they play and they fit, and see where the pieces land, and if maybe they do work out, maybe they don't work out. And if they don't work out, I would say that that's fine too, because it's given me something to learn. So, you know, if I was speaking to anybody at Berkeley right now, a young person, I would say, you know, what is going to kind of help you? What are going to be those things that kind of help you move forward? And you may not get to always just do music and sort of make your income from that. But at the same time, you know, I think one of the things I felt was, music was also playing too many roles in my life, and I was relying on it to kind of be the thing I went to play if I needed, you know, maybe if I felt sad or something, but I was also relying on it to be the thing that supported me and paid my rent, and I was, you know, relying on it to do this and that. And so, you know, removing a few of those pressures from it kind of allowed for different things to manifest.
Sure. That's great. Well, I have only one last question for you, Thompson, which is, you have the mic. Is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, I think, you know what? I think this is great. I'm glad you're doing this podcast, because, you know, one of the things I thought when I was at Berkeley was, you know, sometimes we think in extremes. So we think of musicians and artists as like, you've got the starting artist and then you've got like the Beyoncés, right? And there are a whole plethora of people who operate in between there. And so there is definitely a place for all of us to kind of find what that niche in that area is. You know, one of the things I would say, actually just thought of what you mentioned, one of the things that doesn't get taught at school with the music that could get taught is, I don't think there's enough emphasis on understanding how people make their income. And as you start to understand the different facets, and like, you know, whether it's like a clothing line or some investments people have made, you start to understand that even the biggest artists that we know of and think of are generating incomes in different ways. And so starting to understand that would make it easier and allow for people to, you know, to be open to the different possibilities of things that can help feed their art. So.
Sure. Well, hey, That's great. Thomas, I'm so glad that we are finally able to have this conversation.
Me too. Thanks for thinking of me.
You bet. All right. Look for a message from me in the near future, and best of luck with everything.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great day.
Bye.